Mandy Pellegrin, Policy Director at the Sycamore Institute.
Yeah, and just if you would, a bit of a mission statement for the Institute.
Sure. The Sycamore Institute is an independent, nonpartisan public policy research center for Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So this study, if I understood it right, this was a study that you worked on?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe just a little bit of a purpose statement for the study, if you would.
Sure. So let's see. So we set out on this project about a year ago to look at the problem of medical debt in Tennessee to see how common it is, how it happens, how it affects people's lives, and what state policymakers can do about it. Our mission is driven largely by advancing the health and prosperity of Tennesseans, and this is a topic where those two themes really intersect in a really meaningful way, where health and prosperity are very interrelated.
Yeah, and can you tell me where it is the data for the study came from?
Sure. So this is a sample of 2016 Credit Bureau data that was put together by the Urban Institute.
Yeah, yeah. So you then took that data and crunched it in-house, I'm guessing?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So maybe you could talk for a moment about what you were looking for in the data and then what you found.
Right. So we wanted to take a look at the data and understand how many folks in Tennessee have medical debt on their credit history, how common it is across the state, and really how it impacts people's lives. And what we found is that medical debt is extremely common in Tennessee, and it can make it hard for people to get ahead. So about one in four Tennesseans had medical debt on their credit report in 2016. That's about 24% of Tennesseans.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious if you broke the data down demographically. Did you take a look at how the debt was distributed by various demographic groups?
So the Credit Bureau data is not that detailed, at least what we had access to, but we were able to use a separate survey that asked people about having unpaid medical bills to try to better understand what kinds of folks have it. And really what we found out is that it can happen to anyone. It's pretty common across most socioeconomic and demographic groups. However, there are some folks that tend to have higher rates of medical debt, and those are folks that don't have access to health insurance, people with lower incomes, individuals with lower levels of education, and Tennesseans of color.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So you mentioned that part of what you're hoping to do here is to get the attention of policymakers, decision leaders in the state. I'm curious if you've gotten any reaction along those lines to this point to the study.
So we just released our policy options paper on Tuesday, and we identified 12 different policy levers that state policymakers could tap into if they wanted to do something about this issue. And there are really a range of policy opportunities there that look at everything from preventing medical debt from happening to begin with, to helping individuals manage a medical bill once they receive it, to really mitigating the negative effects of medical debt on your credit report. So now really the hard work begins of getting the message out, sharing with policymakers what we've learned, understanding what their priorities are, what their interests are, and what they might want to do about it using this information that we've learned.
Yeah, yeah. So we, of course, have a legislative session coming up first of the year. Will you be taking that data to the Capitol in January?
Sure. So we're actually starting off this conversation with an event on October 29th in Nashville at Belmont University, where we're bringing together experts on this issue to begin that discussion. And we hope policymakers will attend that event. All of the information is available on our website. And of course, a big part of our mission is developing relationships with policymakers, understanding what their needs are when it comes to research. And so we will be leveraging those relationships to share with them what we've learned as they set out on a new legislative session.
Yeah. Beyond legislative leaders, I'm curious if your policy suggestions, if any of them are directed at say, you know, the medical profession, you know, like the hospital association, medical association, even individuals, you know, things that individuals can do with regard to debt. Do your policy recommendations go beyond just kind of the political decision leaders?
For the most part, they are targeted at policymakers, but there's no reason that the lessons that we've learned couldn't be used by the private sector to institute their own changes. So, for example, we have a pretty lengthy section on healthcare provider billing and collection practices. So that's the kinds of policies that hospitals have to provide financial assistance, for example, to seek out payment from their patients, and in some cases, even suing patients. And it's possible that the private sector could pick that information up on their own and sort of decide to self-govern themselves or to lay out some standards that maybe they want to practice in a more uniform way. So certainly this information could be used outside of the public policy realm.
Yeah. Last question that I have. I'm sure you've seen recent reports about medical practitioners, hospitals getting more aggressive with their debt collection techniques in various places around the country, where you know those have come to the attention of reporters. I'm just curious. When you were doing the survey side of the study, whether or not you came across, at least anecdotally, instances where people in medical debt felt they were being that they were being that their debtors, the people they were indebted to, were being overly aggressive with them.
Yeah, so we did not go out and survey folks to understand that. We tried to use information that was sort of already available. There's a couple of different things that we looked at that might get at that issue a bit. One, we tried to look into court data across the state to see, for example, how aggressively healthcare providers were taking folks to court, for example, for unpaid bills. That data is really difficult to come by because it's local court systems, and every court system shares different information publicly. But, you know, there have been reports out of upper Northeast Tennessee that a health system there sues people fairly frequently. And then we dug into some data in Shelby County and also found that healthcare providers there do take folks to court quite a bit. Another source of data is the Federal Trade Commission, and they track complaints related to folks feeling like they've been aggressively tracked down by debt collectors. They also track things like, scams, email phishing things, stuff like that. But the number one complaint from Tennesseans is around debt collectors. And that's pretty consistently the case every year.
Yeah. You mentioned Northeast Tennessee and kind of Southwest Tennessee. Anything mm-hmm. from with regard to debt collection for Middle Tennessee?
I very briefly tried to look at some data for Nashville recently. I dug into about 9 months worth of case information there. I found that healthcare providers do a fair amount of lawsuits in the Nashville area. Fewer hospitals certainly than in other parts of the state. It's different kinds of provider groups that seem to be filing lawsuits in Davidson County.
Yeah. Different how? Is it hospitals primarily in other parts of the state and individual practitioners here, or vice versa?
Right. So in Shelby County, the primary lawsuit, let me rephrase that. In Shelby County, the top healthcare providers that were filing lawsuits in terms of number of cases were really two large health systems in Shelby County. In Nashville, the top health provider group that was bringing lawsuits was an emergency physician group.
Yeah. All right. So that would be these kind of minute clinic places that you see around town, that is that type of thing?
I can't say for certain. I mean, generally how it works, with few exceptions across the state, is that hospitals will contract with provider groups, so the providers themselves are not necessarily employed by the hospital, but they are instead employed by a separate physician group that the hospital contracts with. And that's the case for most emergency physicians. So I believe that's what this particular emergency physician group is. It's a staffing group that staffs emergency departments.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. All right. Well, that's all the questions that I have. Anything else that your expertise, your familiarity with this suggests that perhaps we should discuss before we stop?
I guess one more point I would like to make is medical debt is really unique from other types of debt because of some of the unique ways that people can find themselves with an unpaid medical bill. It can be circumstances that are really sort of tough to predict or control. So, for example, you know, you make a very conscious decision to put something on a credit card, for example, or to enter into a mortgage. But in the case of medical debt, you might have an unexpected medical need. You get into a car accident, you have a heart attack, or you might run into a surprise billing situation where you go to a hospital in an emergency, or you set up a surgery at a hospital that's in your network, and you end up getting care from a physician that ends up being out of network. And that is happening in a lot of cases around emergency room visits. The emergency physician group is not in network, but the hospital that you went to was in network.